nuclear, chemical, biological weapons systems are all still worrisome regardless of what's happening in Syria. So the element of that that I think is going to hang things up on sole purpose is probably the chem and bio, leaving space in our declaratory policy for the United States to consider options for addressing very extreme chemical or biological or conventional threats with nuclear forces as well, or through our nuclear deterrent forces with signaling and otherwise. So those will be, of course, reviewed again in the next nuclear posture review. So you're pointing to the TLAM-N history is really, I think, helpful, especially if you break it down into the two phases in answering what became your later questions. So President George H.W. Bush, with the presidential nuclear initiatives, he first got rid of the TLAM-Ns basically unilaterally. And that actually created a big backlash with some of our allies that felt that they were sort of cut out of the decision-making process and that we were making decisions that seriously affected their security without sufficient consultation of what that would mean for their security environment and for our provision of the security umbrella that we have for them. If you flash forward to then the Obama administration in the 2010 nuclear posture review, formally taking those redeployed weapons and formally cutting them out of our stockpile, that type of decision was taken with a lot of consultation with our allies. So it was much smoother, much more consultative, even within our own government, but with other countries as well. So even that one specific type of weapon, you have two cases that are very contrasting on consultation with allies that became very important for how they then played out, how those decisions played out in the security environment in the years after and those alliance relationships. So getting to your next question of whether there's room for anyone outside to influence the nuclear posture review. So number one, do it quickly. There's some of our defense officials have been saying that though the formal order, from what I understand, the nuclear posture review gives it a year, that it will be conducted in about 6 months. So the timeline is very, very short on this. So if anyone wants to act to influence the United States, please get on it as quickly as possible. But I think that one of the most important aspects for signaling to the United States, a lot of these conversations will happen internally, but when we're talking about internally, and just in Washington, not just within government, when we in the United States are talking about making these major changes to either policy, like no use, or to our modernization plan, you hear this constant refrain that we can't make any changes because our allies won't stand for it. So almost all of my work on the LRSO has actually not been in Washington at all. It's been going to have private conversations with our treaty allies, most of whom are under our security umbrella, to see how they would react if the United States were to get rid of the LRSO. This has trickled into a much broader conversation about could we go bigger and talk about getting rid of these weapons globally and not just the US. And there's a lot of hype for that. But the problem is that the consultation channels, because of rank and our sort of way we have to go about diplomacy and mill-to-mill relations with other countries, a lot of the channels for discussing these issues officially within government are self-reinforcing. So if there are voices in parliaments or publics or civil societies of our allied countries that better represent the spread of national interests, not just the security side and just not the provision of nuclear deterrence, but the need for disarmament, the need to make progress on the step-by-step approach, the drive for many publics, even in our allied countries, to completely eliminate nuclear weapons. That threat of national interests from our allies is not well represented back to us in conversations to the United States. So I think it's actually a very underutilized and potentially very helpful thing is to amplify voices. Again, the whole world is great, but we're mostly concerned about our treaty allies and how they're going to take these decisions. The more people in those countries with differing views and more nuanced views on different decision points the United States might take, amplify those back, the richer our discourse can be in the United States on what might happen if we were to take certain decisions. And it may seem crazy, but there's just not enough of this. So when we were contemplating, the Obama administration was contemplating the no first use question, the conversations in Washington were wholly different than the conversations I was having mostly in Tokyo, for example. So there was not much consultation. There was a lot of frustration, and the reactions that I was getting from counterparts, knowledgeable counterparts in Japan, was very diverse set of concerns and views compared to what was being portrayed in the US media as just a one-sided, top-down decision that Japan absolutely would not accept it. There are lots and lots of viewpoints and lots of concerns that we should have been talking about at a deeper level, and we really weren't. So to your question, you would have to act quickly if it's anything focused on the nuclear posture review. That's not the last step. Obviously, these decisions are made on a continued basis, but I encourage anybody that has voices on these to amplify them in the United States as much as possible.
Thank you very much, Christine. Yes, sir. Could you please identify yourself when you're asking your question? Thanks very much.
Yes, I am Michel Monod from the International Fellowship of Reconciliation. I have been following the working group on to take forward nuclear disarmament. And my organization is promoting nonviolence. Maybe this topic of nonviolence has nothing to do with national security. But when I hear the risk of nuclear detonation, I just think it's necessary to have an alternative to those armaments to defend a country. And Gandhi, who knew atomic bomb in Hiroshima, said, nonviolence is the only alternative